Here we go. Who am I talking to?
This is Aaron Bland from Madrone Cycles.
Okay, so you made a big splash recently, obviously with your replaceable parts for some of the SRAM derailleur stuff. But here we are at MADE, and you've got a pretty sick looking... It's not a Paul rear derailleur. It's a Madrone. Right?
Yes.
It's
yes.
All you.
Yeah, this is...
So I'm making a terrible joke, because the last time we kind of really saw this was Paul. Maybe Ingrid did theirs. Yeah. But, like, this is awesome. It looks amazing. And I want to hear more about it. Like, you know, it's one thing to make a quickie replaceable part, but you're going all in on the whole thing here. That's awesome. Tell me more about what's driven this and what you're trying to get done.
Yeah, so we started with the derailleur project based on lessons learned out of the rebuild kits for the SRAM derailleurs. And once, you know, we reverse engineer these, sort out all the tolerances, get the assembly tooling sort of figured out. And, like, at some point in there, I was like, you know what? We could actually make our own derailleur and address a lot of these issues. And I think the association with, like, Paul or Ingrid, I mean, we totally appreciate that. And, like, the goal with this derailleur is to be low friction, so it's got ball bearing pivots, there's a pulley wheel there, all the linkage pivots are all on ball bearings. We've taken all the play out of the assembly, so there's a cool design in the mounting bolt that keeps it play free even as the parts wear. And then the ball bearing pivots allow us to tighten down the pivot axles, so we're taking up all the axial play, and then whatever play there's going to be in there is just inherent in the ball bearing themselves.
Right.
So that, and then we've got there's two springs in the return spring on the cage, on the linkage cage. So what that allows us to do is prevent premature wear out on the springs. So you've got more force, especially at the small end of the cassette range.
Premature wearing, essentially reduction in spring rate.
Yeah, like those springs will fatigue over time, and so then the derailleur doesn't work as well. And
sure.
You'll hear, I get a lot of people saying, "Oh, Aaron, my spring wore out on my SRAM," and I'm like, "Okay, that does happen." And the problem is they have to stretch so far to get the full range of motion.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
With this, it allows us to run springs that are lighter, so they can stretch further. But by doubling them up, we then get the total spring force back.
Right.
And more of it, actually. So
makes me think of like an AK-47 trigger kit with their winds and their springs and shit like that. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Oh,
it's
not analogous. I'm just thinking AK-47
yeah.
Suddenly.
Well, fun, like the other kind of the themes of this derailleur are precision, rebuildability, and compatibility. So another angle here is there's a cam on the bottom of the links. With that cam, we can tune for almost any shifter and cassette combination. And so each gear is actually adjusted. We just iterate with our 3D prints, and then we finalize the geometry when we make the real parts. But that allows us to basically tune any combination. So you could, if you
Shimano shifter, SRAM spacing, whatever,
wanted,
anything
but,
like that.
But also, the way I'm looking at it is, like, when somebody might consider buying this derailleur, when they've banged theirs up, they can look at it and be like, well, I know it'll fit my drivetrain now, and if I buy a different bike, I could even move it onto that bike without buying a new derailleur. They can just modify it.
Right, right. So it's more of a future-proof type thing, so that, okay, like you're saying, it can be extendable. Oh, a new drivetrain came out. Okay,
yeah.
Replace these three parts.
Yeah.
Boom,
yeah.
It's working.
Yeah, that's
okay.
The idea. And, like, you know, another one like that is the, we have the UDH direct mount
yep.
version.
That's pretty cool.
The same knuckle will actually go on a standard style as well. So that we're really pushing on, like, multi-compatibility, you know, just so that all the issues that we hear about working on these other derailleurs, we have ways of addressing that for people, so that, you know, they can keep this thing working. Like, a finally
okay.
tuned watch, you know, as long as they want.
Okay. Is it a horizontal or a slanted parallelogram?
It's basically, well, it's normal to the center plane of the bike, but as you can see on that one, it's not horizontal to the ground, but it does swing normal to the bike. Unlike, so like a Shimano will run along the kind of the cassette taper.
Yeah.
These swing normal to the center plane.
Right, yeah. Right. So without using certain words, it does that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. and yeah. That's right.
Staying out of the copyright zone.
Well, no, I mean, it's not actually parallel to the ground. It's this way. You know what I mean?
Right, but if it hits a bump, does it crawl up the cassette?
No, but actually, the Shimano's don't have a huge problem with that, actually.
They used Dynasys, they did.
Yeah, the old school.
Dude.
Pre-clutch and lower spring.
No, this is after clutch.
Yeah.
Dude, I exploded so much 10-speed shit.
Okay.
Because of that exact problem.
Yeah.
So I'm highly tuned to I want it to work the way a particular manufacturer makes theirs work.
Yeah.
Because I've blown up enough shit.
Well,
right?
The cool thing about this is it's not like covered by patent, because just look at the oldest derailleurs out there. They're so simplistic and they swing normal to the bike.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really what that comes down to is you can swing this way, but this length on the cage needs to be longer. On a Shimano,
sure.
Because it swings that way, this can actually be much shorter.
Of course.
So
yes.
That's the kind of the trade-off, if
yes.
you will.
Yes, and when you have that normal swing, let's say, it means you can't run a 2x generally, versus the slanting generally helps you with the 2x.
Oh, how so?
I think isn't it with chain take up, in terms of being able to take up the right amount of chain? I forget technically right now. I'm not exactly prepared to have drivetrain discussions right now. I've been talking frames for a bit.
Yeah.
But there's some stuff with that in my mind in terms of 2x, because I just made a couple road bikes and they're going to be touring bikes, and I can run them 1x around town, but like you want to go touring or do real expedition stuff, you need more range.
Yeah.
So that starts saying, okay, well, we got to go 2x now. Mm-hmm. And then, well, a particular brand's great derailleurs don't work in that environment. So now what do you do? And
yeah,
all that
yeah.
sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that my mind's a little bit there.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about yourself. What's your background? Are you an engineer, a machinist? Do you have these tools around you during your day job? Or what's up with that?
So my background is mechanical engineering. I've been working for about 20 years. And I've always wanted to work in the bike industry. I grew up riding and racing bikes. But most of my career has been in small electric vehicle batteries. So I've worked on some electric motorcycles that are out there. I worked for Amazon on the Prime Air delivery drone batteries.
Uh-huh.
I worked for some other electric motorcycle companies. So a lot of times my background has been on two-wheel chassis and batteries or electromechanical devices.
And actuators type of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And this is something I just love and have loved my whole life. And this is I've been working on Madron for about 9 months, and then we launched in Sea Otter this year, so it's been public for about like 4 months now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you have other personal projects prior to this that are worth talking about?
Oh, yeah. I've done, I built a few frames. I built that frame there, that touring bike frame.
Okay. Seems like a very different type of build from a guy that might produce this.
Yeah. And, you know, my welding skills are pretty crappy. So,
yeah, mine are too.
They work. You know, I can stick the tubes together.
Uh-huh.
But I like the idea, you know, coming up with ideas and testing them out. So I built some downhill frames. I made suspension links for a while.
Uh-huh.
I made downhill fork crowns for a while.
Cool.
So just various, I've dabbled for years, but this is my first real, like, going for it in the bike industry.
Where are you based out of?
Ashland, Oregon.
You're an Ashland guy.
Yep.
Okay, cool. I keep thinking that you're like a California guy in my head, but for no reason other than just Cali, you know? And in Ashland, there's tech enough
for you to be making money there? Like, are you, do you a remote worker?
I was at times, but I mean, I totally prefer to work with people in person. This is a funny thing that I'm in Ashland, but at my career, the first half of my career was in Ashland at a company called Brammo. We made electric motorcycles. People have heard of Zero. Brammo was a competitor to
Zero. I've seen Brammo.
Yeah. So we did like production bikes and racing bikes. And then
I have a motorcycle background.
Oh, yeah.
I'm used to all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really where I got started. And then we lived in Seattle for a bit. And then around when, before COVID, I was working remote. But once COVID hit, we just sailed right into remote work. And then since then, what I've been trying to do is be a little bit more entrepreneurial, get this started if I can. Uh-huh. So, you know, there's always a remote work possibility, and I'm open to that. But the truth is I prefer working with people, with my hands, building the things myself, you know, like...
The engineering dream, so
absolutely,
to speak.
Yeah, working in the workshop. So I have a lot of fun. Like, we do mail-in rebuilds, and I just get a lot of satisfaction out of, like, getting a junk derailleur, working on it at like 9 to 10 p.m., knowing that it shifts perfect, shipping it off to the person, and being like, that one mechanism works awesome again. Like,
That's what I think. I don't do that, but I watch a YouTube channel periodically called Wristwatch Revival.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And
you get it.
Yep. That's all about, like, here's a broken watch. I'm going to pimp it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, yeah, I get the satisfaction also bringing something back to life.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked as a motorcycle mechanic and just like, okay, this has been collecting dust behind the shed. Let's make it go.
Yeah.
You know, all that sort of stuff. Well, it's exciting. I'm sure there's much more tech stuff that we could cover at length via email or something like that. Is there something, like, say, if an engineer was listening right now that you think is worth mentioning about what you've gone through to make this, and something maybe you had to learn or was unexpected, you know, that those things that come up where you go, oh, well, son of a bitch, I never really thought that would be a thing, but it totally is, you know?
There is one thing, it's almost more philosophical, which is, and I was talking to my friend Eli last week about it, is that I had to unlearn how to make things complicated. With this, I was finding the design, not creating it. And so I really want, when people experience working on this, that it feels like a mechanic designed it. And for that, you have to be willing to look at it differently, simplify some things, and just keep iterating until you find something that's the right balance of simplicity, but it there's no compromise in the way that it works. So it's really, the whole thing here is execution and simplicity, and I'm honestly trying not to be too techie. I'm trying to make it simple, trying to make it rebuildable. So,
well, what you're talking about is higher layer mechanical engineering.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's like, I recently did a frame fixture at the beginning of COVID. I did can't even remember, my brain's going. Anyway, I do that frame fixture design and I make it and everything like that. Oh, this is the best thing I could ever done.
Yeah.
And over the past 4 or 5 years, I made another redesign that was virtual and another redesign that was virtual. Different goals in the redesigns, but I never really made them. And then I came up with this new, another design and a way to do it that is simpler, easier,
better. Yeah,
it's no problem to do this or that. You can extend it into this way. It can be modified in that way. All these sorts of things, and it was cheaper and everything like that. It was so much so, I actually had to go and make a second frame fixture of my own design.
Yeah,
because I had gotten it to that next level of engineering where it's like, yeah, this isn't expensive machining. That's what's good.
Right.
That's how you know you've gotten there. It's like, you've made it cheaper and easier to make.
Yeah.
It's dumb easy now.
Yeah.
And it's more precise. And it's more rigid.
Yeah.
And it's more, but you know, it's like, yeah, it's like, that is the best engineer.
Yeah, I believe so too. And it's easy to talk about, but I think it's hard to do. Because,
it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
That's why we see so many Rube Goldbergs running around.
Right.
You know?
No, absolutely.
Rube Goldberg's easy.
Yeah. You know, and you make, sometimes Band-Aids just get baked into the final product because you don't have time to go back and change everything you need to fix it. And so with this, I'm really taking my time. Even things like these four screws.
Mm-hmm.
These are 40 long, 40 millimeters. These, I cut them to 38 with a hacksaw, and I'm like, well, I don't want to make a custom screw. I want them to be all standard sizes, if not all the same size. So that may change. And things like that are all over this thing, and it's a whole set of details, but you just keep resolving them over and over again until you have the fewest number of...
You know what I do in my designs? Yeah. Like for a screw like that, I'll of course have a parametric screw, like from the McMaster, wherever your supplier is, but it's a mimic of that screw in the computer. But I'll have each length with the shoulder and everything like that. And I change it by what's available. Like if 28 isn't available, well, I go with 25 or 30. And it's like, if in my assembly it's sticking out, well, I know I have something to nudge around if I want it to meet. And that's with all the washers stack up and everything like that. So that it's like I did some skateboard trucks where the axle nut that holds it on to the titanium machined axles that are precision and everything like that. You know, we always take things too far, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm constantly amazed by the math that I did. Not that it was complex or hard math, but it was just like planning, thinking, and getting it all done. So when that axle nut is fully tightened into place, the nylock and the end of the axle just kind of round off together just mm-hmm. so, and it's just perfect.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that takes time and energy.
It does, yeah.
You don't just get that,
yeah.
You know? And it's I find in assemblies like that, it's just like, do the work, model the shitty little parts, model the washers, make sure that every size in your configurations are actual available sizes.
Mm-hmm.
That are, this is, and or better yet, like sometimes like in, you look through McMaster, and I just say McMaster because that's where I'm using stuff from.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
like the 25 millimeter is so much cheaper than the 26 millimeter.
Right. Oh yeah.
Like it's like, oh, why is it twice the cost?
Yeah.
Well, it just is.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's starting to point to maybe you want to use a 25 because not just making it simpler, not just making all that, but like you're sourcing cheaper materials.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's another level of awesome engineering, you know?
Totally.
And I love that shit. I'm hoping this becomes even better than this and is awesome and just blows everybody away.
Thank you. Yeah,
it looks cool.
Goal. That's the goal.
And it looks like you're coming out with it right. It's exciting. And I see the Instagram shit you put out, and I think you have some some YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I pay attention to that stuff and I watch excitedly.
Cool.
So
thank you so much.
I
appreciate that. Thanks
all
a
right.
lot, Peter.
Cool.
Yeah, no, I know.